Good morning. Sharing. It's one of the first things we teach our children, along with don't interrupt, say please and thank you, and don't touch that. Play nicely, you hear. Don't fight. Don't snatch. Share. But why should we share? You see a child, a small child in a nursery or in the home, with a favourite toy that he's found, say a teddy. He's decided he wants to play with it, and so he starts to make up a game about it. Picking it up, putting it down in the chair, picking it up, putting a hat on it, putting it back in the chair, all the while with this little running commentary. And every child, no matter what their mother tongue, is fluent in foreign languages. My grandchild can speak the most wonderful mixture of Chinese and Russian and German, none of which, as far as I know, she's ever really heard. With the occasional English word tried out. Teddy. And then another child comes along, whether it's another nursery child or a brother or sister or whatever, looks for a moment at this secret world that's going on here and feels left out. So they go to the heart of the matter and pick up the teddy. The first child objects. There's a bit of a kerfuffle. The grown-up around looks across and sees irate child A beating the living daylights out of child B, who's disrupted the game. The second child didn't want the toy until he saw the first child playing with it. But of course, inevitably, grown-ups being the way they are, the decree goes forth, Wayne, let Zach play with the teddy. You've had it for ages. You must learn to share. So Zach, second child, triumphantly grabs teddy, walks off with it, promptly drops it somewhere and forgets all about it. Wayne refuses to be comforted or to play with anything else for hours. And that's what sharing is like at the age of two. So it's not surprising, therefore, that we find it a hard lesson to learn. And those people who can share freely, ungrudgingly, spontaneously, are rare indeed. And when it comes to friendships, it can be even harder. Even as adults, we like to think we hold a special place in our friends' hearts. We like to think there's someone, at least, that we mean a lot to. It's hard when a phone call doesn't come, and you find out later that the expected caller was out with another friend and forgot. We sometimes tend to keep our friends to ourselves so that we can feel they're more likely to be around when we want them. In two of today's readings, we met two people who were more than willing to share. In the Gospel, Jesus was calling people to work for him, and Philip, as soon as he was instructed by Jesus to follow him, went off and found Nathanael. Full of excitement, he tells Nathanael, "We found him. We found the one we've read about, the one that was prophesied, Jesus of Nazareth." And Nathanael, far from jumping up and down and saying, "Oh, brilliant, where?" says, "Oh, Nazareth, what good ever came from there?" Now, had I been Philip, I would have been very tempted to make some rude retort. "Oh, blow you then, never mind, I'll go on my own." But no, Philip, smile seemingly never fading, says, "Come and see." He doesn't try to talk Nathanael round, he doesn't start arguing, he just says, "Come and see." Now that's quite something when you think about it. And one of the nicest ways of being introduced to a new church or a WI or a men's group is not just to tell someone about it, however good you make it sound, not just to say, "Oh, you ought to come along sometime." The best way is to say, "I'm going next week. I'll call for you. Come with me. Come and see." How did you first get into the church? Did someone tell you about it and leave it at that, and you made your own way? Did you see the sign outside and think, "I'll give it a try"? Or did someone say, "I'm going on Sunday. Come with me"? Nathanael says nothing good can come out of Nazareth. Now, Nazareth was despised by the Jews, possibly for two reasons. Firstly, it could have been hated because a Roman garrison was housed there, and the Jews weren't keen on the Romans. And it could have been because Nazareth was a place of no real account, and not the kind of place that hit the headlines. It's not mentioned outside of the New Testament until the 3rd century AD. It appears nowhere in the Old Testament, which is, of course, all the people of that time would have known. If Jesus was supposed to be the great prophesied king of Israel, then he should have come from a place that had more going for it than Nazareth, they thought. But it never does to prejudge people. Nathanael may not initially have had a lot of time for Jesus, but Jesus was more than ready to welcome Nathanael. Jesus knew all about Nathanael. He was shrewd in his reading of Nathanael's character, not prejudging, but putting two and two together. Nathanael had left his studying under the fig tree to go and find out for himself what Jesus was like, and if the prophecies that Philip had mentioned had actually been fulfilled. So Jesus deduced from that Nathanael was an open-minded and honest person who wasn't prepared to rely on gossip and hearsay. Christ knows us too and can put two and two together. Honest people don't have a problem with that. It's the dishonest ones who might feel uncomfortable about it. Christ knows the real you and me and invites the real person, the mixture of good and bad that's in all of us, to come and see. Come and get to know him as he knows us. And the similarities were there in the first reading, the Old Testament story, at a time of low spirituality in the country, when everyone could have done with some positive prophecies and some divine intervention. The voice of the Lord was heard by a child. Of course the child didn't understand what he was hearing, but old Eli did. And again, it would have been so easy for Eli not to explain to Samuel exactly what that voice was. Eli wasn't doing too well in the Lord's eyes at that time, and it would have been perfectly understandable if he'd kept his knowledge to himself, sent Samuel back to bed without any explanation, and tried to get on the same wavelength to God, hoping to win back a few points for himself. But no. He tells Samuel who is calling him, he tells him exactly what to say, and then sends him back to bed so that he can hear the message on his own. Are we able to stand back sometimes and let our friends and family have their own moments of glory and their own experiences? Or do we want to get in on the act, having rambling conversations about how the same thing has happened to us and trying to take away some of the limelight? Again, it takes a very generous person to really be ungrudgingly happy for someone else's good fortune. It would have seemed more logical, perhaps, for God to communicate through Eli, older, wiser, a priest, and one who'd already heard God's voice speaking to him directly. But as I said, Eli wasn't in favour at that particular time. He'd let his sons behave badly and had not been a very strong priest as far as keeping discipline in the priesthood was concerned. So God spoke to young Samuel, a boy who was so innocent in the ways of the Lord, he'd not yet learnt to recognise his voice. God does not always work through the most obvious people. We tend to turn to our ministers and vicars when things go wrong because they're more used to coping in difficult situations. They're used to listening and advising, and we hope that all their knowledge and training, as well, of course, as their compassionate Christian characters, will help to support us in our hours of need. And all the clergy in this circuit, I can say, are very good at that. But let's not forget that God can work through any of us. And not even preachers and stewards and junior church teachers, but every one of us, even the children. None of us is too insignificant as a person. And none of the areas that we live and work in are too insignificant as places for us to count with God. If we are receptive and responsive to his call, he will use us. In both of those stories, there was an intermediary. Eli helps Samuel to recognise the voice of God. Philip introduces Nathanael to Jesus. Many of us have been brought to God by someone else. Many of us have been brought even nearer with special jobs in the church. Sometimes I know I've heard complaints that newcomers have barely got their feet through the door and they're being eyed up for door stewards or coffee rotor members or leaflet distributors. This is a busy church with lots of people organising things, but not everyone wants to be an organiser. We can't always take on all the jobs we're asked to do, but maybe we can sow some seeds for other people. Perhaps by pointing out other people's talents or by getting people together. Many of us were approached by someone, apparently after our name had come up in conversation several times. God is always calling people to work for him, and the Samuel and Eli story is a good example of old and young working together. We can all learn something from both age groups if we really listen to them. Have we ever thought about asking the younger 25% of the congregation and the older 25% of the congregation what they think of their church? What do they like best, dislike most? What works for them, what doesn't? The comparison of answers might make interesting reading and throw up a lot of ideas where young and old could join together. The best family relationships are between grandchild and grandparent. Have we ever thought why? Old and young can meet on an impassioned level that perhaps middle-aged people temporarily lose. Children are not worried about the long-term future because they don't know about it. Older people don't worry about the long-term future because, with the greatest respect, they don't have to. So therefore, these two age ranges are free to meet in the immediate present. God uses everyone and God is at work in everyone. And those who follow Jesus will see the signs of God at work. If we give ourselves some quiet time, which for some of us is not very easy, but if we sometimes sit in complete silence, without TV, radio, music of any kind, and no one there to interrupt, it's surprising how we can think things through. Ideas pop into our heads that we'd never have thought of if we were surrounded by noise. Jesus needed his quiet time, as we know. He was always disappearing off by himself, up the mountainside or by the lakeshore, to pray to his Father. But he always came back to join his disciples and friends. And friends, I think they became over the 3 years they lived and worked together. And the original disciples spread the good news and invited others to join them. We found something wonderful. Come and see. Let's share it together. And of course, that was what went wrong with that sharing lesson that I explained at the beginning of this rambling discourse. The children, remember Zach and Wayne, weren't sharing. They weren't playing together with the same toy. They each wanted the same thing at the same time for themselves. As we join in the act of communion in a few minutes, perhaps it might help to remember that Christ gave everything he had for us to share with each other, not to keep to ourselves. Like Philip and like Eli, we need to be able to share the good things in life, the things we really value. We need to be able to share Jesus Christ, and the more people that know about him, the greater the glory we can share in. So let's not be afraid to listen to what people are saying to us, so that at the right moment we can say, I've found something wonderful. Come and see. Amen.